moved my schedule around some and went down to the airport Thursday afternoon and picked up this great lady. She just, that energy, and I just loved her immediately. Just energy and that positiveness about her. And she started telling me about her husband that she loves very much, and he's here in the crowd. She actually has a whole fan club that came down from Wisconsin to be with her. So I think we are in for a real treat, and I'm really, really honored to introduce Tina H. tonight.
All right. Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Tina Hornsby.
Hi, Tina.
Woo! Okay, you guys ready? I'm ready. Couple of things I want to share really quick is I just wanted to thank the committee. It's an absolute honor. I mean, I can't even express to you how grateful I am to be here in Atlanta, Georgia. I love the thank you basket. That was incredibly thoughtful. I'm really not that thoughtful, so it always impresses me when people are so thoughtful. I appreciate Gertie. She shows up with this multicolored hair and flowers for me, and I thought, right on, man, this is what I'm talking about. You know, this is what Alcoholics Anonymous is about, right? And Gertie didn't stop talking from the time we left until she dropped me off here. She just kept talking and talking and talking. I thought, well, that's good. I hope she shows up to hear me speak because she don't know nothing about me. But she's an amazing lady. I think listening to her story, she should have been your speaker today because she's got an incredible story. So if you go to meetings with Gertie, I hope you take the time to get to know her because, wow, whew. Anyway, so I don't know her story. I mean, I do. I could probably tell you, but they told me that I have to share mine. And you're probably looking at me like, you know, for me, you know, I go hear a speaker, I always want to know a couple of things right off the bat. I want to know how old they are, when they got started, you know, I just want the basics. So here it is. But before I do that, I do want to thank, I have a bunch of my home group here with me today, and my best friends are here, and my husband is here, and I don't want to cry, but Jiminy, you know, for people to fly out. Come on. I mean, that's pretty incredible from where I came. So thank you from the bottom of my heart. April 19th, I just celebrated, I got sober April 19th, 1984. I just celebrated 23 years. Thank you. Thank you. I actually flew home from New York one day just so I could take my cake at my home group, and then I back off on the road, but I am only 37 years old. I'll be turning 38 in May. I got sober when I was 14, so we're going to get there, okay? So here it is. You know, I'm from a really small town called Germantown. It's about 30 minutes west of Milwaukee, and you know, every time I hear speakers like Bobby or Billy or some of my other friends, they always tell you exactly where and when, like as if I was going to know where that street is. But obviously that has some bearing on their story, so I just thought I'd tell you I'm in Germantown. I don't know if that relates to any of you, but it's a small town, and there wasn't very many people, and everybody knew everybody. And three blocks down the road were my grandparents, and to me, along my journey, that was my sanctuary. And I have a brother and sister, both older than me. It's Tina, Tanya, Tony. And if you're really mad, then it's Tony, Tanya, Tina, whoever you are. T, get over here. And I grew up in a family that I have a dad that, and it's funny because he reminds me a lot of your main speaker for this evening, except for my dad is real short, and he's a construction worker all his life, you know, with the big Popeye arms. And he has a great big handlebar mustache and red hair, and everybody called him Yosemite Sam, or I call him Little John. He doesn't take to that name real well. That's probably why I do it. It just gets me going every time. So Little John and my mom, and I love Al-Anon. I heard the speaker. If you didn't hear her, I have a really hard time listening to Al-Anon speakers because it just, all I want to do is cry. It just touches my heart. My mom and my dad raised us in Germantown, and in my household, what happened was, it's like, you'd walk in, you just never knew what was going to happen. You know, I was the kind of girl that always walked on eggshells. I just didn't know. I didn't know what was going to happen. Sometimes you get smacked in the mouth, and sometimes you would be ignored or nobody would come home and you didn't know where anybody was. And I did a lot of eating my meals with blood running out of my face because I don't know what I did, but I know I did something, and I got cracked for it. And so in my family, what happened was you had two kind of emotions. You were either pissed off or you were getting pissed on. And and you didn't want to be the second, you know, you didn't want either, but that was kind of what it was. And my dad had the philosophy of you either teach a lesson or you learn a lesson, kid, and that's how it is. And he'd move the furniture and he'd show you how to fight. And so I grew up really fast. You know, when you're in a family like that, to you it seems really normal. Other people don't think it's so normal, but I grew up really fast, and you learn to make your way. And a lot of times people wouldn't come home. You know, and I was like 10 or so, and people wouldn't come home, and I didn't know what to do. So I'd call up my grandma, and she'd come over, and she'd, you know, there would be puke in my shoes or something from the cat, and obviously our house wasn't very orderly, and so she'd clean me up, and she'd send me off to school or whatever. And trust me, that is not why I'm an alcoholic, not at all. But I can tell you that it contributed to my attitudes and outcomes to other people and my reactions to other people. And what happened to me is that I basically got into this attitude that I was a tough girl. Don't mess with me, because I am tough. And what happened is I went to a friend's house. Her name was Julie, and I went to her friend's house, and she was doing something, and we were playing Barbies, or I don't know what we were doing, but we were having a good time, and all of a sudden she goes, "Oh, my God, my dad's home," and I'm like, "I am out of here." And she's like, "Why?" And I'm thinking, because you're gonna get beat. I don't know. You know, I don't want to sit here and witness that. You know, that's the kind of stuff that when, you know, that kind of stuff was going on, you'd just leave. And she's like, no, my dad's really cool. And he came in and gave her a great big hug. And I thought, I'm different. Instantly. And I got to tell you, I started drinking very, very young. If you heard Bobby's story last night, I started like him. My family didn't celebrate anything but Thanksgiving. And when it was Thanksgiving, they would have champagne all the way around, and everybody would be drinking and having a good time. And so my aunt is mentally efficient, and so I went and helped her, and I would always help her clean up, and I would drink everything I could all the way around. And I get these big, I call them Clifford cheeks, because my grandpa Clifford had these big red rosy cheeks, and my cheeks would get all red, and I'd be funny, and everybody would be like, "Oh, she's so cute," and I would be wasted. And I loved it, and I thought, yeah, baby. And my dad was a big, you know, my grandfather sold Schlitz beer, and so, you know, I'm from the beer capital, and everybody drank beer, and so my dad would have these great big parties at his house, and we'd be drinking, and everybody would be drinking, and it was just normal for the kids to drink. I mean, it was like no big surprise or anything, and then there'd be a brawl, you know, and then everybody would be, you know, somebody be crying and consoling, and it was just crazy and chaotic. And I remember thinking to myself, this is the bomb. I mean, I just really felt lucky, you know. I remember thinking of that Julie girl again, and I thought, she just doesn't really know how to party like this, you know. I mean, this is just the bomb. And so in high school, I growing up in school, you know, I actually in middle grade, I know this sounds crazy, but in middle school, I started learning how to steal radios and stuff because, you know, I didn't have a job to support my habit. And so you have to get creative. And God bless those Al-Anons. My mom, I always used to sneak out of the house, you know, and I'm sure she could hear it because she got up at 1:30 every freaking morning to go to the bathroom, and you'd wait for her to go to the bathroom, and then you'd raise up the thing and you'd sneak out, and there was a great big rose bush there, and I know she always knew when I was out drinking because I'd have like thorn marks all over me because I was trying to get back into the window, you know, without her knowing. And and I remember, and just not too long ago, about 5 years ago, I went over there to help her clean up her yard. You know, I'm trying to be a good daughter now. And we took that rose bush out, and she goes, "I loved this rose bush." And I'm like, "You didn't know!" You know, so things are always more revealed, you know. But anyway, so in sixth, seventh grade, I found this wonderful thing that Musty, the Al-Anon speaker said that her kids smelt musty. I smelt musty a lot, let me tell you. And woo, I was just really calm. And normally I was really hyper, and all of a sudden I started getting really calm and cool and hanging out. And I learned about the toilet paper roll, and I was like, that was it, man. I went to babysitting jobs, and we'd ransack the house, and I would try to find whatever it was. If you'd find a whatever you would ransack it until you'd found something. And they always had booze in the house, and so we'd drink their booze. And I don't know why, but my girlfriend always had a weird fetish of stealing other women's lingerie. And so I would get in trouble for it. But we'd try to sell it because, you know, you need money. And we'd make up these stories. So I lied a lot, and it just came natural. It was like I was really good at giving you a really good line and getting what I needed. And I got to tell you, I was about 12 years old, and my girlfriend, you know, you always have that one that just kind of pushes you over the edge. You know, well, Kristen, she was like, Tina, you got to steal the car. You got to steal the car. And I'm thinking, I can't steal the car. I can't steal the car. I can't steal the car. I'm stealing the car. Okay, I'm going to the car. I just had no, you know, I just never, I couldn't stand up for myself at all. I was like, okay, I always wanted to be fitting in or have that cool story. But the problem was that I could never remember. I was a puker. I was a projectile puker, too, which is not cool at all in high school. So anyway, she's like, Tina, you got to steal the car. You got to steal the car. And I'm like, okay. And I lived next to a park, so I, you know, people were always going in and out. I mean, that was like the party park. It was called Spazland. It just fit me perfectly. I was like, God, how could it be more perfect? And so I'd roll the car down, and so I'd start picking up people. And I had a dealer right down the hall, you know, and girls, I mean, come on. I knew how to work it when I was starting at 12. I mean, I didn't have very much going on, but whatever I had going on, I was working it. And I was like, you know, I wasn't even interested in guys, but, you know, if you rubbed their leg and told them how cute they were and stuff, they were like, hey, you know, you want to get, you know. And so I stole a lot of brandy. I loved blackberry brandy, man. My aunt drank blackberry brandy, and she'd forget that she bought so many bottles, so I'd always pick up a bottle over there, and I liked it warm, and it tasted like syrup, and it made me feel just warm. You know that warm sensation that you get? And I loved blackberry brandy, so I'd down the blackberry brandy, I'd roll the car out, and I didn't know how to drive, so that was a little bit of an issue when you came up to intersections and stuff, and you didn't know who had the right of way. And I'd be sitting there, and I'd sit and wait for a while. And oh God, I could give you an hour just on those stories, but I'm not going to. And you should be grateful. And so this was my routine: is that I would go out, and I would go in the middle of the night after 1:30, after my mom went to the bathroom, I'd sneak out. And I would go and get crazy. I hung out with a drug dealer that lived down the street, and he was also a Satan worshiper. And I thought, oh, I love this guy, and we were going to bond. And so needless to say, I started stealing stereos or whatever I could. And at Kohl's department store, you can just actually go in and get a shopping cart, and you can put whatever you want in it and then just wheel it right out. And I would even steal the trash bags, and then you'd load up the trash bag and put it in, and you just walk right out. And they didn't say anything, you know. And so then I would sell that stuff to get money. And so I had quite a lucrative business at the time. And I'd come home in different clothes or whatever, and my mom would be like, what's that? Well, you know, you borrowed it from a friend. I mean, that was always the thing, or I was at a friend's house or whatever. And when alcoholism is very active in your household, they don't really account on anything for you. I mean, you just can go wherever. And my dad was always at Ernie's, and my mom was always chasing him at Ernie's. And my brother was, you know, going to go into the military, and my sister was freaking crazy, at least as far as we all knew. And I was insane. I was absolutely insane. And at 12 years old, let me tell you, I was working it hard. And so then, you know, you start to go through your teenage years. For me, 13 and 14, I just started drinking, you guys, and I just couldn't stop. And what happened was I was involved with this very weird religion, and the church was starting to come down on me. So my parents put me in a psychiatric place, and I was in the psychiatric place, and he told me, Tina, you need to not drink or use any substance. And, you know, 3 days, I'd be sober. And I was uncomfortable. I was so uncomfortable. I just couldn't take it. And I'd walk over to Chucky's, and Chucky would be like, these guys don't know how to show you. You got to show them how to do shots. I was a great shot girl. And I'm like, oh, give me that cold turkey. And 3 days, man, I couldn't take any more than 3 days, because if I was sober any longer than that, I would want to crawl out of my skin. And I hated everyone. I was a rager. I was a complete rager. And I'm going to speed you up to my last drunk. And what happened is, and this went on for a good year and a half that I just solidly, I used every day. I was a binge drinker. I would stop cars in the middle of the street, and I would jump in, and I'd be like, take me to the bar, and I would just rub their leg or rub whatever, and we'd get to the bar, and then by the time I was so plastered, they would literally, I was maybe 98 pounds, and they would pick me up by the back and by the pants, and they would throw me out, and somebody would come pick me up, and I was always on a runaway. So I was running away, and they'd shove me in these little, I'm just going to tell this real quick story before I get there. I was really tiny, and so I would be a runaway most of the time, and so the cops would come to my friend's house, and they had this little compartment that they'd shove me in. So under the stairs, they would open this little door, and they would shove me in there when I was passed out, and then I'd wake up, and I'd be like, oh, all right. I mean, it was like home. This is a natural feeling for me to, you know, wake up in a little weird place and be all crunched in there because, you know, the cops were there and they didn't want to get busted for me being housed there and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I'm certain my mom starts not coming home at night. And I'm like, what, you know, because mom was kind of the savior. If my mom was home, my dad didn't beat the crap out of us. And so you always wanted mom to come home. And mom started not coming home. And then she told me she was going grocery shopping. And she didn't bring groceries home one night. And I'm like, you are not going grocery shopping. And I was like, I'm busting you, you know. And she's like, you know, no, don't do that. I'm going to this thing called Al-Anon. And you can come, Tina. They have this thing called Alateen. And I'm like, oh, okay. But right before that, though, see, I'm so out of control. And I don't even know, I have no idea where anybody in my family is. And nobody has any idea where I was. So we don't even have pictures. We have no recollection because we have tried. We have no recollection of where anybody was. I'm sure we were hanging out. I don't know. Here's what happened is my dad, in the craziness of his own alcoholism, decides to become a father at one point and says, you're grounded. And I just started laughing. I'm like, are you kidding me? Grounded, you know? I could have been grounded all the time. I don't know. I just snuck out of the window. It didn't matter if I was grounded or whatever, you know? And so I begged them to go to this. I'm going to go to high school. This is a huge deal. And for a freak like me who is just full of fear and running off of fear, I was scared to death. So what are you going to do? You got to get a good one on. You got to get tight. And so we talked these two guys into getting us a bottle, and they got us a huge quart of brandy. And I was with Cheryl Stinson, and my girlfriend's like, we got to get loaded. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I had three days. I couldn't get anything. I couldn't, you know, because my dad was trying to be a dad and not let me out of the house. I'm like, I got to get something. And so I drank that bottle. She took three sips, and I drank that entire bottle, and I drank a whole lot more. And I told you, I'm a projectile puker. And I got to tell you, 3 days before this, when my parents are kind of coming down on me, it's in the 80s, and if you remember the 80s at all, they had the big hair. Well, I had just gotten a perm, one of those spiral perms, and I had big hair. And I always wore this Hush Puppy shirt that made my boobs look bigger because, you know, you have to enhance when you don't have it. And it was stained with, like, blackberry brandy on there because, you know, I had, you know, puked a lot on myself and other people. But I thought I looked hot. And so I'm getting ready, and I have the big wall with the hairspray because, you know, you gotta look good. And so I've got just I have my black gas shoes on and my flannel on, and I'm cool, and you know, makeup, Pat Benatar, the thick black makeup, and I had that look, you know, like, don't mess with me. And I smoked, of course, you know, right? And so I get ready to go to this thing at this high school, and I'm just like inside, I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm going to high school. Oh my God. And I was just freaked out, and everything was such a big deal for me. I never told anybody, but it sure felt it inside. And so I go to high school, and we get drunk. We get just wasted, and I walk in, and I call somebody that is a friend of mine a nasty name, and that's all I remember. And the next thing I remember is hearing my mom say, oh my God, she's out of a coma. And, you know, and when you come to, you got to be cool too, because you're like, you know, you don't really know what's going on. And so I have all these things in my arms, and I'm like, I start ripping them out, you know, just typical alcoholic thinking. God, I got to get out of this one, you know. Oh, come to find out that the vice principal of the school, Mr. Bernstein, actually found me face down in a ditch and in some water, and I was out of it, and he started walking me around and realized that I had taken a little too much alcohol in, and my intake was not high on the level. If you ever saw Father Martin Chalk Talk, you know, you fluctuate when you're drinking like that. Your system one time one beer gets you really drunk, and one time, you know, you need a 12-pack, and I was on the downswing, and it didn't take much for me to get a little feeling going on, and so this Mr. Bernstein started walking me around, and he called the ambulance, and he realized that something was very wrong with me, and you know, my good friends all left me because that's what you do when you're, you know, young and foolish. And I woke up in a hospital, and the next thing I know, I'm in the back of a police officer's car, and I'm like, oh, this ain't good. Little John is going to get me tonight. Oh, this ain't good, you know, because if there's anything you know about Little John, he don't want the cops there. You can do pretty much anything, but don't bring the cops home with you, and or you'll get a beating. And so I'm in the back of this cop car, and I'm thinking, okay, I've got a strategy. You know, this alcoholic mind is keen, and I got to tell you, I had great ideas. And so I pulled those handcuffs out in front of me and wiggled my way up, and I thought, the first chance I get, I'm out of here, right? And I loved cops, because I always thought I was so cool, tough, you know, I always liked to, yeah. And they didn't. I was nothing in the hood. They opened up the door, and I hit them as hard as I could. And I ran, and there was a hill, a big hill, and I didn't realize it because it was in the middle of the night, and I went toppling down the hill, head over heels, and they were laughing and running after me, and he's like, how'd that feel? And I threw up right on his shoe, and he kicked his shoe, and it went right into that beautiful wall I had going on, and they dragged me by my hair up the hill, and the next thing I knew, I woke up, and I was like, where am I? And on the side of the wall, it said, welcome to hell, in black magic marker. And I thought, this ain't good. You guys, there's a problem right here, right now. And I'm thinking, and you know, you got to start the wheels going. You got to try to remember and pull things. And I'm like, I wasn't really with cops. Maybe I was with cops, you know. And so you got the whole, you know, committee meeting, because you got to figure something out. And so I go shuffling down the hall. And I can't move right. Things aren't working. You know what I mean? Like, you know something's wrong. And I walk into this little room, and it's a bathroom, and I turn on the light, and I scream this blood curdling scream. And I didn't recognize the person in the mirror, because I had what they called alcoholic poisoning, and my body had swollen three times the size, and my hair that had the puke in it was matted, and I had been laying there for days. I had been out for days. I had been there 3 days. I didn't even realize it, and I was completely sweat-ridden and wet, and the hair and the puke and the thick makeup was all over, And I didn't know where I was, and I thought, oh my God, this is not good. And I shuffled down, and I see this pool table area, and this guy's playing pool, and I got to tell you, I thought, well, that guy ain't that bad. All right, I can do this, right? You know, all of a sudden, it's so quick, it leaves, you know? And I'm like, hey, what are you in for? And he's like, for molesting little girls like you. And I went, maybe I better get up. And so, you know, I shuffled out of there, and I went into this thing called the day room, and I'm feeling crazy, and I start what they call DTs, and my body starts detoxifying, and because I'm so little, my body's just in rapid shakes, and I got a bruise on the side of my face from leaning on a puke bowl, and I had this bruise, and this doctor walked in, and he said, Tina, after evaluating you and talking with you and et cetera, he said, within 2 weeks, if you keep drinking the way you're drinking, you're going to die. And I got to tell you, at 14 years old in a psychiatric hospital, it's pretty intimidating. And I bought it hook, line, and sinker, and I was scared. I was so scared. My parents wouldn't have me back. They gave me three options. You're either going to go inpatient treatment, you're going to get adopted out because your parents don't want you back, or you're going to go and do this outpatient treatment. And I thought, wait, outpatient treatment? You mean I get to go home? You know, I was working it, right? And I'm like, I can do that. I'm going to do that, right? And last day, just a really quick side story. Last day I'm in there, they were going to show the Twilight Zone, and I really had an issue with that because Chewy, who was crazy, and he would stand there and chew, 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 chew. And I'm like, and little Yoda, I was just crazy. I was crazy nuts. I have nothing in my system. And they were giving me drugs to equally balance out my body because it was just all messed up. And I think it was lithium or whatever I was on. And I was getting stir crazy, and I'd been there for a couple of weeks, and And all of a sudden, they're like, we're going to show the Twilight Zone. And you know, my opinion matters, and I wanted everybody to know it. And so I was having an issue with them showing the Twilight Zone in a freaking mental institute, you know. And so I started a riot, and I start running around the day room, and they're trying to chase me. And the next thing you know, I'm in a white, you know, jacket, and they chain me to the floor. And so that was my last day of the beginning of my freedom. And what happens is I go to school, and if you ever got drunk on school grounds, and yeah, you know how the stories go. I mean, I had been gang raped by the end of it, and I had jumped over like 5 buses with a motorcycle, and I mean, and it's nothing true, you know. It's just, I was like, really, did I, you know? I'm like, I don't know, because I think I was there, but I don't know. And and instantly everybody's calling me the alcoholic, and my world changes, you know, because I used to hang out with the freaks. And I was a lizard. That's what they called it, a lizard lounge. And all of a sudden, I'm different. And so I promised that I would try it for 30 days. What do I got to lose, right? I mean, I'm in a rough shape right now. You know that line in the Big Book where they talk about the inability to bring up that last experience? I didn't have that problem because people were shoving it in my face left and right at school. And you know what? Honestly, that might have saved my life. I don't know. I really don't know. But I do know this, is that I was completely humiliated, and I just wanted to crawl out of my skin, and I did not want to be there, especially when that big, fat, blue boat came rolling up to pick me up for treatment. And this little old guy was in this car, and they came rolling up, and everybody's like, oh, that's the rehab car. And I'm like, oh, just shoot me now. But I got to tell you, I never felt like killing myself because I'm not that strong. I just, you know, it was one of those things that only the drink would have taken away from me, that complete insane fear. And so now I'm stark raving sober, and I'm pissed off. And I don't like you, and don't you dare tell me what to do. And I get in this car, and this little old man, he smelled really sweet. He used to smoke cigars, those clover cigars, and he was real sweet smelling. And I just sat there, and I didn't look, and I thought, oh my God. Oh my God. And we went and picked up some kids, and they had been in trouble that day for selling other substances. And I thought, oh, all right, so this is a joke, just like anything else. And it didn't take me long to figure out that not everybody's serious about this program, right? So anyway, I go through treatment, and what starts happening is my family starts getting sober. My mom's going to Al-Anon. She takes me to Alateen. And I got to tell you, before I get sober, she takes me to Alateen. My first Alateen meeting, I go in there, and there's like, Carrie, she's still sober today. She takes me to my first, you know, they call it a first step or whatever. We go out on the back steps, and we got high. And I thought, all right, I fit right in here, you know. This is good stuff. And we talked about our parents, how horrible they were, and that was pretty much it. But what it did do for me is it introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. So what happened is I'm hanging out at an Al-Anon club. I had just now, as you hear, I'm in high school. I just got sober. Everybody in Al-Anon and AA at that club knows about it. Of course, I don't think they do yet. And they're just like, I walk into the Al-Anon club because my mom's going to an Al-Anon meeting, and she goes, I think you should go to Alateen, to AA. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, they're going to know. And everybody's just smirking at me, and I thought, I hate you people. And so here's what happens. I start going to this Al-Anon club, and I have to go in as an alcoholic, and I'm not happy about that. And I told you I have this anger issue, and I have absolutely no program going on at this time. And so I'm pissed off, and I'm angry, and so I fight. And change one thing for another. And so I start fighting. I don't know how to deal with all these crazy feelings going on because they're calling me a narc at school. And so I had to beat somebody's butt there. And I'm thinking that, you know, I'm just trying to survive here. You know what I mean? I'm in total survival mode. And I go to this meeting, and I walk in, and these old-timers, you know, and they knew. I mean, these old-timers, God bless them, because they knew me. And I'd have a big welt on my head or a black eye or something, and they'd see me coming, and they would lock the door. And they knew I was dropped off, and I'm like, and I would get so angry that I would, like, pound on the door. And then, so they play cards, the sheep's head thing or whatever. And so I'd run around the side of the school, and I'd bang on the windows. And 5 minutes before the meeting, they'd let me in. And I would sit in that meeting, and I'd be so pissed off in these meetings. And if anybody remotely said anything that I feel, I would tell them all to F off, and I would throw my chair, and I'd walk out, and they would laugh. Keep coming back, Tina. Oh, and that just enraged me. I was like, well, so... This guy over here, they used to call me F and Tina because every other word was, so I was known as F and Tina, and here comes F and Tina, and they would lock me out, and this became a routine of mine, is that I would show up at the Alano Club with a new bruise or a scrape, and they would lock me out until I would calm down long enough, and then I'd come into the meetings, and sometimes I would be calm enough to hear you people, and sometimes I'd be in the bathroom beating the crap out of somebody, and they'd be banging on the door, Tina, we don't do that here. Let her go. Tina, you got to come out of that bathroom sometime, Tina. And God bless those people, because can you imagine, right? So these six old farts decide, you know, that I need a little help. And they all got flannel shirts, and one's got big ears like a taxi door sitting there open. And I had a name, you know, Dad. And, yeah, I had a name for all of them. And they start kind of showing me the ropes. And I'm not real genuine at this time. I mean, I'm white knuckling it, as they call, and I'm crazy, and I hate everyone, and I'm at school, and they're making fun of me, and I don't fit with the cheerleaders that I was beating up and making them push dimes down with their nose, and so they all hate me. They got some resentments going on, and so I'm just angry and raging, and so I'm just fighting all the time, and I'm getting sicker. And I'm sitting in these meetings, and I'm getting sicker and sicker. And these old guys are like, "Hey, you know, why don't you just come and hang out with us?" And I just couldn't get it, you know. And so instead of going to meetings and stuff, because I'm an alcoholic doesn't mean I'm going to hang out with you losers. And you don't understand. And I start to become terminally unique because you see, I'm young, and you just don't understand. And guys, I got to tell you, and I plead with you wholeheartedly, that if you're an older person and you're in a meeting with some young people, don't say, I spilt more than you ever drank. That's damaging. You know, are you sure you should be here? You're so young. I needed to be here. Obviously, you heard my story a little bit. So, a little crazy there. You know, we're the only ones that can say we're alcoholic. And I got to tell you, these old people, they would say things like that, and I didn't feel a part of. Mm-mm. And I didn't want to feel part of. I mean, the reality was is that I didn't want to fit in, and I surely didn't want to hang out with you guys. So what I did was, like any good teenager would do, is I start flirting with guys, and I start trying to fill some of that stuff going on with different things, you know, because I'm empty. I'm running on empty. And so I start doing crazy things. I start going bar hopping because, you know, you old farts don't understand. And you guys just play sheep's head. I refuse to learn that game just because they played it. And you just don't understand because I'm unique and I'm different and I'm like the only female, young female. The eldest to me was like 25 years old or 26 years old, and that was old when I was 14. You know, I mean, when you're 15 and you're just coming in, I mean, really, honestly, my first sponsor, she's like, well, you know, you need to write down like three things that you really want out of life or whatever. And really, the highlight was I wanted a leather jacket. I wanted to date on my own. I mean, there was just some real simplistic things that I wanted. I have like 20 jackets that are leather now. I've gotten that one come true, thank God. But so I differentiate myself and I become terminally unique and you just don't understand. And I do that a lot. And I go, well, you can't understand. You didn't have to go to this stupid thing in school sober when they're looking at you. And, you know, and they're like, yeah, but Tina, we got a solution here. And I just couldn't hear it. I just could not hear it. And so I'm hanging out on the east side of Milwaukee, which is a real cool, hip place. And I'm going to these bars and I'm manipulating my way in there because I don't drink. And I'm using my sobriety because I don't drink. And let me just come in. I'm underage, but let me come in. I just want to dance. I don't want to hurt anything or do anything. Plus, you don't have enough booze for me. I mean, you know. And I think I'm the bomb. And the next thing you know is I'm sick. I'm sicker than I'd ever been, and I hate myself, and I hate you, and I hate myself. I can't take it anymore. You know what I mean? I just couldn't do it anymore. And I thought, my God, if this is all there is to sobriety, I'm going to kill myself. And then it dawned on me that I remember hearing somebody say, you haven't even touched sobriety yet. You've just been dry. And so I called somebody from that club, one of those old farts, but he was kind of on the younger side. And I said, I'm dying, and I can only either drink at this point or I'm going to die. That was it. And to me, to drinking, I would die anyway. So they came, bunch of them came from the Northwest Sauna Club, those people that I abused for 4 years prior to this. I'm 18 years old. They came, they moved me in a matter of about 20 minutes. And honestly, I was living like a pig. My clothes were bug infested. They couldn't even put them in my parents' house. My parents agreed that I could live there as long as I start going out or AA and get a job. And because I was working it, you know, and I was doing no different when I was using than when I wasn't. I was always working a deal. I was always snagging. I was always stealing. I was always lying to you nonstop. It just was an automatic response. And my reaction to everybody was, you just don't understand. And all I wanted was sympathy. And they moved me back, and they kept my clothes out. I had to buy new clothes. Most of it was ruined because of these bugs. And I start going to meetings. And this guy says to me at a meeting, he goes, you know, pain is suffering, growth is optional. And I'm like, pain is suffering, growth is optional. I hate you. And I walk away. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to hang out by him. And so this old timer says to me, he goes, you got to go to this place called Monday Night Action. They got, you know, kind of younger people there or whatever. And yeah, younger people. I think the youngest was like, I don't know, 30, 34. I'm like, younger people. I don't see younger people here. But anyway, so I start going to this meeting in St. Mary's, and it's got like 30 people, and they're all like, hi, how you doing? And I'm thinking, oh, I hate you, you know? And I just hate it. And so I go down there, and they were a little bit different than this club I was hanging out with, and they were real attentive to me, and that felt good. And so I'm like this young girl, and they're all talking to me about getting a sponsor and this and that, and so I get the sponsor, and she's like, we got to start working because, you know, otherwise, you know, this ain't worth anything, right? And I'm thinking, okay. And so she starts telling me things to do, and I'm like, so do you, oh, okay. And I don't do them, of course, you know. I'm thinking, oh, okay. And she calls me one time, and she's like, you know, Tina, you can't keep hitting people. And I'm like, oh. And she's like, you know, I know that you got, you know, feelings and stuff going on. And so needless to say, you know, she and other people start to teach me that it's not okay to hit people when you're angry or feel anything, because that was my response to everything, is just to crack them one. And I know I'm little, but I used to take them by surprise. You know, jump, yeah. And I pulled hair. Yes, I admit it. And so I start going to this meeting, and she's like, well, I think we need to sit in the front row. And all of a sudden, you know, things start to change. So she says, every day when you get up, you have to read the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer and get on your knees and ask for some help. So I start to do that. And in the midst of all this, I want you to know, when I was going to that church and that weird religion, and the psychiatrist, all in one shot, like within a week's span, I got kicked out of church, I got kicked out of the psychiatrist's office, and then I got kicked out of devil worshiping because I had too much mojo around me or whatever, I don't know. So I had been kicked out of everything, and obviously I was having issues, and I really did not want to be kicked out of this woman's life because I heard you could get fired or whatever, and I didn't want her to fire me, and I was scared, and I was hurting. I was just a hurting unit. In fact, I was hurting so much, but, you know, I was the kind of girl, I didn't like to ask for help because to me that meant weak. And so I would hear these old timers talking, and, you know, and everybody talks about these old timers, you know, and so there's certain people that you hear a lot about. So I would stand by them, and I would listen to what they were saying, and I would eavesdrop. I was a great eavesdropper, and then I'd go home and try it. And I think that, a whole lot of prayers, I'm sure, from those old timers. Hope she gets this, you know. and that kind of thing. And I think that started to help me on my journey. And what happens to me is about 5 years of sobriety, this year that I start to develop, I start to realize what sobriety is about, and I start to take these steps. And I realize that I'm just living off of fear, and that fear is driving my life in every aspect. Every single inch of my body is fear-ridden, and I start to learn about this thing called sobriety. And so what happens is, you know, that wouldn't be fun if I just ended there, right? So what happens is I'm thinking, I go into these meetings and everything's good. And so they're like, Tina, you got to go to this speaker meeting. And I'm like, what's that? I'd never heard of such a thing. And so they're like, oh, yeah. You got to do greeting. I'm like, oh, I can do that. So now I'm out on my own. I get an apartment. I'm out on my own. And I think I got this thing going, right? And I have to go to the speaker meeting. And so I'm a hoochie girl, you know. I like the short mini skirts. And I got these high, you know, 4-inch pipes, you know, going on. And I'm like, I'm thinking I'm looking good. And I show up to this event. And I've got a hoochie skirt on and the big high heels. And everybody starts walking up to this event. And they're dressed like they're going to church. And I'm thinking, oh, I'm in trouble. I'm like, and it's the first time I realized that I'm inappropriate somewhere, because before it didn't matter. I didn't care. But I'm starting to care now. I'm starting to care about not only my actions and reactions, but I'm starting to care what you think about me, because you guys are starting to give me a life back. Like, I'm starting to like myself all of a sudden, and I'm in a hoochie outfit, and I'm like, oh my God. And so I'm 30 minutes away from here, and so I want to leave. And they're like, no, you have greeting duty. And I'm like, oh my God, a commitment. Oh, and I'm thinking, oh my God. And one of the old timers smiles and smirks and walks right up to me and says, Tina, will you read How It Works Tonight? And sit at the head table. And I'm like, I hate you. Yes. And I had a lot of people on my hate list. I got to tell you, it took a long time to get through that. And so I had to sit at the head table, and it's the first time I start to realize that it's not okay to be a hoochie woman, and it's not respectful to AA. And so they start to gently tell me. And so my sponsor gives me an assignment. We have this big inner group that meets every year, and this guy named Clancy I comes out and talks to you, and everybody's talking about it. I never heard about it, and I'm like, oh, my God. And my sponsor says, Tina, I want you to go to this thing, buy a ticket, and you're going to go to this thing by yourself, and I want you to wear an appropriate outfit. I thought, okay. And I get there, and nobody ever told me, like, there's thousands of people there. Like, nobody told me that. And probably a good thing. So I get in my little brown car, and I'm like, okay. And I got this little real conservative outfit, and I think I look totally stupid, you know. Like, God, does this suck, you know. And I get there, and it's like the longest walk ever through the parking lot. And I'm like, oh, my God, there's so many people, and everybody knows I'm here by myself. You know, it's all about me, you know, because I come from MSU making stuff up, man. I know you are talking about me, you know. And I'm like, everybody's looking at me. I'm all by myself. I was freaked out, you guys, you know. And I walk in, and I have to sit with all these, like, gods of AA, all these old-timers, and I'm so concentrated because I'm just freaked out that I'm listening to Clancy so hard, and we're like in the front row. I can't hear anything he says. You know what I mean? I was like, and I just couldn't get it. And I knew they were going to ask me what I felt like or what I thought about the speaker. And I'm thinking, please God, don't ask me. Please God, don't ask me. Sure enough, the old timer Al says, what'd you think of the speaker, Tina? And I'm like, I didn't really like him too much. Like, he said something about women, and I didn't like that, and that was the only thing I heard, you know. And so somebody started nodding their head, and it was the first time I ever in my entire life had an opinion through my own eyes. I always wanted to please you guys. I had no idea, you know. And so my journey really starts to begin, and I start to dive into this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous, and I start to get the privilege to sponsor women. And unfortunately, there's still not a lot of women there that were real young. And so I hear this speaker that totally influences my life. And I got to tell you, I know you're not supposed to have heroes in AA, but I'm sorry. There are certain people that just have touched my life that have changed me as a woman. And this guy gets up there, and that's the one I had to read How It Works at. Never forget that. And he gets up there, and he's this old, skinny, weird, freaky-looking guy, and I didn't like him right off the get-go. And he goes, hi, I'm Milton. I'm an alcoholic. And I went, ah! You know? And he changed my life. He changed my life. He came over to me and talked to me that whole evening, and he said that in order to be a really great brother, he had to start praying for that. And so I'm like, I got to pray to be a good sister. And he said, in order to be a good son, he had to pray for that. I gotta be a good daughter. Because I had hurt these people. I mean, I was a tornado. I'd steal from them. I did a lot of naughty things. And so I was like, I needed to make up time, right? So I'm thinking, I gotta pray to be a good granddaughter because I know I abused them. I mean, I abused everybody. So I'm like, I'm going through my list, right? And I'm gonna do this. And then he said to me, he goes, you've got a gift that nobody else can have in this room. He said, you are a young person that can touch young people. And I got to tell you, I had a purpose. And if you don't have a purpose, you need to find yours. Because that changed my life. And then all of a sudden, I met this guy. And he was serious about recovery. And he goes, Tina, we're dating in about 6 months. He goes, Tina, I'm going to take you to Iskipa. I went, what, Ipa? I'm like, now, I got to tell you, I've been working this thing for like a year, and I'm like, you know, I got to check that out with my sponsor because I don't know if that's real AA. I'm thinking, who is this guy, you know? And he goes, I got to take you to Iskipa. He goes, you're going to freak out. And I call my sponsor, and I tell her what's happening, and I said, I've never left the state with a man before. And she says, I think you should go. If it's a young people's thing, I think you should go. And I'm like, okay, I'm going. And so I get in my little brown car and a little Pinto, and I'm driving. And he's like, and it's like 1 o'clock in the morning because, you know, I never do anything normal, right? You always got to leave at weird times and show up at like 2 o'clock in the morning. It's just natural. I mean, that's just what feels good for me. And so we're driving, and I'm like, so where are we supposed to go? And just like a really good organized alcoholic himself, he's like, well, I don't know. I'm supposed to be looking for this broom that's in a door. And I'm like, a broom? A door? It's a snowstorm, 2 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like freaking out, and I'm in another state, right? And all of a sudden I hear, George, George. And I go, there's some old guy running down the road calling your name, George. And this old guy is running, and his name was Joe S. And Joe S. had, to me, like 100 freaking years of sobriety, but it was like 26 years of sobriety. And he welcomes us into his house, and he goes, you are going to be amazed before you are halfway through, Tina, and you are going to go to Iskipa tomorrow. And it's at this place called Jumer's, and it looked like a great big castle. And I'm like, okay. And so his wife put on some coffee for us, and George and this guy start talking, and I just shut up, and I start, you know how you see two old-timers kind of talk, and I just start taking it in, and I felt like I didn't know anything, you know. I didn't know what they were talking about, but I did know one thing. I was attracted to it. They had something, some kind of glow, and I'm thinking, wow, I had never seen this before. I didn't even know there was AA outside of Wisconsin, and so I'm sitting there, and so we go to this thing called Jumer's, right? And so I'm freaking out. I'm thinking, this guy's going to, like, pick up some other chicks. I mean, all my insecurities start coming out, and what if there's a whole bunch of young girls and blah, 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 because I don't like you yet. And so this guy, Harlan, this little black guy, he comes up to me and goes, you're on security duty, and you're taking care of this elevator. And I went, okay. And I know about commitment now. So, you know, I'm on the elevator, and I'm riding the elevator, and all these young people start coming in. And you can imagine my amazement, because I had never seen any young people in AA at this point. And I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And at this particular conference, over 2,000 people show up at this young people's conference, and I have found my life. They were not only serious about Alcoholics Anonymous, they taught me about traditions. They were talking about service work. They were dressed up in ties from the podium. And so I'm like, oh, my God, I'm just overwhelmed, right? And I'm riding this elevator, and I'm meeting all these people, and I'm like, this is the best thing I've ever seen in my entire life. I fit here. I'm here. And I go to this open meeting. They say, you got to go to the kickoff meeting. Don't miss the kickoff meeting. Everybody's telling me this, and I'm like, I'm not missing the kickoff meeting, kickoff meeting, kickoff meeting. I'm going to the kickoff meeting, right? And I get to the kickoff meeting, and I sit down, and I don't know anybody, and it's, like, really long. It's like forever long, and then there's a big, you know, everybody's up here, and I'm like, wow, look at these people, you know, holy criminy. And this guy gets up there, and he says the most amazing speech about this young guy who has all this enthusiasm and lit a fire under him, and that you can have fun in sobriety and all this stuff. And I'm like, and I'm sitting there like, yeah. And all of a sudden, they call up George to light the candles, and I'm like, I'm with him. You know, and I'm like, me and him are together. I always want that, you know, ego struck, right? I didn't do anything. I'm just with them. Got the kudos. And George walks up there and lights this unity candle, and I didn't even know what that was. And I'm like in awe. And I got to tell you, I jammed out that night. In the middle of that night, I was jamming with all these alcoholics, and it changed my life. It changed my life. And so what happens from there is I keep him. Or should I say he keeps me. And we start out on this new mission of life. And just to ramp you up, at about 10 years of sobriety, we are hit. I never missed an Iskupa from that point forward, and that was in 1990. It was called Plant a Seed, and it did exactly that. It planted a seed about service recovery and having a whole lot of fun, and about the unity of this program. And we start applying for the Wikipa bid. In 1993, I go to New York, and I go to this thing called the International Young People's Conference, and they are off the hook. 5,000 alcoholics or 6,000 alcoholics, they have to shut down the dance because it's like coming down on the next floor, and I'm thinking, I am the luckiest woman in the entire world. In the meantime, I meet this guy, George. We get married. He has a stepdaughter. She comes to live with me. I'm an instant mom at 21 years old. And I am already living my life. And I think, another person to love in my life. I am so blessed. Now, that little girl, we got her when she was 10. We're all a decade apart. It's a stitch when it comes to music. She's 10 years old. I'm 30. You know, it's all 10 years. Okay, so he's 30. I'm 20. And she's got rocking parents. And she starts struggling through her own alcoholism. And I got to tell you, that little girl went through a whole lot of stuff. And what's amazing today is she says things that I normally say. And she knows this program. And these AA people loved her when she didn't want to be loved. And these AA people I'm talking about are the ones that made me something that I didn't think was possible. They gave me hope. They told me what I could be, and they didn't put me down. But they did do the, I don't think you're going to make it, Tina. God bless them, because I had to show them off, right? So I'm busy. You know, I'm a busy girl. I've got a stepdaughter going on. I've got the AA thing going on. And about 10 years of recovery, I'm not feeling real good. I'm sponsoring all these girls, and I'm real busy, but I'm not feeling real good. And I'm sitting in the front row, and I'm thinking, I don't even want what I got. And it was time to get busy, and my journey started again. You know, this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous, to me, is all about surrender, surrender, surrender. I'm constantly doing a new surrender all the time. And I hear this girl named Polly P, and she talks about emotional sobriety, something I didn't know anything about. And all of a sudden, my journey starts again. And everything that I had ever feared and everything that I had ever truly from the depths of my heart never wanted to come true started coming true in my life. And I thought, oh, my God. And you know what? I had the ability to tell my sponsor. I had the ability to talk to people in these rooms. And I had the ability to open my mouth when I wasn't feeling so good. And at 10 years of sobriety, I felt horrible. And these people loved me back to health again. And they said, don't worry, we've been there. And I couldn't believe it. I'm so grateful I shared it instead of keeping it all inside. You know what I'm saying, you guys? I mean, I used to keep this stuff locked into my heart because I didn't want you to know I was vulnerable. I didn't want you to know that anybody could hurt me. That just is not an option for my family. 9 years of recovery, I went back to school. My sister was sitting in the front row at my home group when she saw me take my cake. My sister and I are best friends today. I have an amazing relationship with my family. I'm like the one that everybody likes. Just because I'm the one that's trying to just be the good sister. You know, my brother's a freak. He yelled at me. I went to his kid's party the other day. He yelled at me, and my husband looked at me with these wide eyes. He goes, you want to go? And I said, absolutely not. It is my job to stay here and be the best aunt I can be. I was at my nephew's party, his birthday party, and there was no way I was about to leave that little chick. He's so cute. I wasn't going to leave for a second. See, I have the ability to work through things today. I do not have to take that stuff personal because it ain't about me. He's got his own story going on, you know? And so, anyway, I turned 15 years sober, and for a girl like me, you know, that's pretty impressive because now I joined the 50-50 club. I was out there, you know, doing the thing, 15, and all of a sudden I got 15 years of sobriety. Those old farts hate that at our meeting. We go, if you want to come to the 50-50 dinner, you have to have, you know, and they're like, what? I'll never make that. What? You can't do that. I'm like, oh, yeah, we did it. Payback's a bitch. Right? So I'm like 15 years sober doing the deal, and I'm loving life again. And I go back for my master's. I get this amazing job. I go back and I get my master's. I'm a DF girl. I'm a DF average. And I go back, I get my master's. I got honors, and you know, because of course you can't be just normal, you know, average, heaven forbid. I cried one time. I called my sponsor. I'm like, they think I'm average. And she went, it's okay. And I went, yeah, you're right. It's okay. I mean, it took a lot. My ego is the size of Texas. I mean, I was not okay with that. It took a lot to be human, you know. My sponsor's all about being human, Tina, just being right here. You don't have to be up there or down there. Just be right here. And so so it's funny, too, because I'm such a, oh, God, I'm such a pig-headed girl. And so going through recovery, you know, they say things like, you should really pray to ask God where he wants you in life, you know, as far as jobs and stuff. And I would hear these stories from people up at the podium all the time, and I thought, oh, that works so good for you, God, you're so lucky, and you know, but I'm different. So I'm sitting in the audience one day, and I hear somebody say that message, and I had heard it a million times, but you know, when it clicks for you, it just is time, and it clicked for me, and I started praying consistently. That was the difference. Consistently, and I asked God to put me where He wanted me, and I was willing to do whatever He wanted. And opportunities have come my way. I got to tell you, I went to the International for the first time in Toronto, and the International is like 60 or 70,000 alcoholics that all come together. And when I had heard about this International, I thought, there is no way I'm going with a bunch of old farts to sit around in a baseball field or whatever sport arena you are talking about. It is not happening for a girl like me. I'm all about excitement, you know. And so unfortunately, I missed all those internationals. And I go to this International, and on Thursday, they like close this whole street down and have a live band, and they're jamming, and I am like awestruck. And a bunch of my girls that I sponsor are there, and they're jamming. They only got like 1 or 2 years, and I hate them. I'm like, yeah, I'm like 23 years sober. I'm just getting to one of these. You little brats, you know. I'm way human. So anyway, so I go to this International, and my life starts to change. I met a bunch of the trustees, et cetera, and I'm praying, right, for God to put me in this good place or whatever. And the next thing you know, I get an opportunity to, I get a new position in addition to the position I'm already carrying. Working for this great company, and I get to go and do performances and stuff, and I'm like, oh my God. And some of my dreams start to come true, and I'm like, oh my God, right? And I'm thinking, I can't believe this is happening to me. You know, did you ever have one of those where you're like, I can't believe this is happening, but you're like so happy, right? And so I meet these guys, these trustees and stuff, and the next thing you know, we're doing the AA tour that weekend. We go to Stepping Stones, which is where Bill and Lois lived, and we go to Dr. Bob's house, and we go to GSO in New York, and I had never seen any of that stuff, and so I'm like, you know, I'm doing the AA tour, and when I get to the GSO thing, somebody goes, oh, this is the girl I was telling you about, and they're like, oh, we want you to fill out an application or whatever, and I'm like, oh, okay, you know, and so I go into this little dark room, and I'm just sitting there, because it's not like not any application I've ever seen before, and they're asking, you know, like, what you've done in service work and all this stuff. And I'm like, this is so weird. And so I'm just sitting there, and some guy walks in, and he goes, what you doing? And I'm like, nothing. I'm just sitting here. You know, I'm supposed to fill this out. I don't really know. And so he starts asking me questions, and we have this great dialogue, and I'm telling him all this stuff. And I've been involved with WikiPaw, and we started WikiPaw, and now I'm advisory chair, and I'm doing all this stuff in young people's, and I love service work, and it's so fun, and everybody fights, and I live for moments like that. I'm sorry, it's true. I love it, you know. And I'm like, if I can't beat anybody up, hell, I like to see a good old AA cap fight, you know. And so I love that service work, right? And I'm like, yeah. And then people hug afterwards, so that's even more fun, you know. So the love's there. And so we're talking, and I joined the tour. Everybody's on tour. I'm missing the tour, and that's all I'm thinking about, because, you know, I was always the kind of girl that would go to a party, and I'd be thinking about what the other party was doing. I got to get to that other party. Got to get to the other party, you know? And so I'm like, oh, my God, what are they all doing? I go on this tour thing, and we walk into the general manager's office, and it's the guy who's interviewing me, and I'm like, hey, I just talked to you, right? And so needless to say, I got asked to be on the board of trustees at General Service Office, and that's where I serve today. I just left the conference. I was in New York, and I serve as one of your servants on the public information. And I got to tell you, for a girl like me, I've come a long way, and I just can't believe it. And I get choked up every time I go there. The conference that happens every April is your opinions coming through your delegates, and they are going to be voting on some things. Some concepts that we came up with, and I got to tell you, I'm on two subcommittees. One is the public service announcement, and the other one is the young people's video. The average age there is 55 years old, and they're all men. And I'm the second youngest woman on that committee, And they don't have many young people there. So if you're interested in service work, by God, you can, I mean, to me, GSO seems so intangible. I mean, it was GSO, you know. And I go every 3 months to serve as one of your servants there. And I sit on the board. And I don't know if I can tell anybody or not, but I had just gotten an email yesterday on one of the concepts that we came up with for the young people's videos, and it passed, and I'm so excited, you guys. I mean, young people are starting to get it noticed up at GSO, and they know that they need to reach out because they are the future leaders of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got to tell you, I never started this journey thinking I was going to be sitting on the trustee board. Never thought that somebody would want to hear my opinion. I mean, I'm just not that cool, you know, and I'm not that smart, I always say, and I just couldn't believe it. And so I get the privilege of meeting all these people that are on this board that have met Bill, and I mean, they have fantastic stories, and they're very formal there, and I still drop that F-bomb all the time, and I'm like, I got to tell you, it's the first time ever. My husband's a braggart, God bless his soul, he's bragging about me, and all these people were up on this panel, and they're like, hey, we heard you're working for GSO, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I almost just said, you're effing right. And I went, can you imagine what they'd think of me if I was talking like that? They wouldn't like that too much. And it's the first time ever that I wanted to switch that, my language. And again, I'm going through a new journey. I'm starting a new journey, you guys, on this path. And I was just at the delegates meeting, which was just intense, and there's all these people from all over the states that are represented, and they have a play right now, Bill and Bob, off Broadway, and we went to go see it, and I'm sitting in the audience, and Bill comes up, and the light comes on him, and he goes, I'm Bill Wilson, and I'm an alcoholic, and everybody in the audience is like delegates, and they're all like, hi, Bill, and the guy's like, it was classic. It was just classic. So you know, and I only tell you this, and I'm only telling you this because I want you to know that I'm totally accessible. If you have any questions or if you want to know about it, I'm totally accessible. I'll give you my phone number, 262-501-9972, if you want to call me and talk about service work or whatever, because I'm on a new journey, and I got to tell you, GSO is totally accessible. And those people want to hear what you have to say, especially if you're young. And we just gave back to the young people. I mean, that video, you know what that video is all about? We're asking young people to submit little webcam videos, raw, what you think of anonymity, what you think of whatever, and you can't show your face. You got to respect some guidelines, but we're going to give it back to them and let them do it. They're young. My sponsee is like to remind me, I'm not that young anymore. My little sponsee called up and said, you know, you've been sober as long as I've been born. I'm like, you're reading tonight. I don't know. Brad. It just ain't right, right? The amazing thing is that I get to hear all these girls that just like to beat the crap out of me, and the old-timers all smile. Yeah, give that one to Tina. They come in with a different color hair. I said, man, if I was living now, I'd have piercings everywhere, and I'd have the freak. I mean, I already had freaked-out hair, but I would have done it all. I was like, God, I wish piercing would have happened when I was around. But anyway, side note. Anyway, I got to say, I can't thank you enough for letting me share. I mean, I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've got the privilege to be on the board, and I'm experienced this whole new thing. I just started that ride. I'm on another ride with Disney. I'm on another ride with GE. I mean, I'm just doing the deal. And the coolest thing about all of this is that I'm having a blast and that I have not created this whirlwind of pain. That is my whole goal, you guys, is like not to create pain, because I'm the kind of person that I can get into a mood like that and I'll hate you. I don't know, just don't like you. And that's just not okay, you know? So I'm constantly fighting that devil, and I'm constantly fighting that devil of, can't somebody else do it? Because the reality is my AA happens at my home group. They give me crap. All these people that are here, all they did was rip on me the entire time I've been here. You know, they don't want my head to swell, you know. And, I mean, that's doing the deal. That's all I do, is I do the deal. I get up, I call my sponsor weekly because it's asked of me, and it's my responsibility as a sponsee to do it. And I pray every morning, and I pray, and I try to be the best I can. On the closing, my husband, George, and I have been through everything, the gamut. And he is an amazing person in this program. He not only walks the walk, but he has an energy and fire about him that is just indescribable. I am so honored to be his wife. I'm not only in love with him, but I still lust his big old butt. And I do. We get to do some crazy things. This guy and I, we got to go to Hawaii, and we both grew up in very poor families, and we both got to go to Hawaii, and we were like, are you kidding me? We're just not supposed to be there. Because I told you I'm a lying, thieving, just little tramp. I just wasn't supposed to have this kind of life, and I'm so grateful for Al-Anon, and I'm so grateful for the people that just kept believing that I could be better than what I was portraying. Because all the thing as I know is that potential was wasted energy, and I had a spirit, and I'm so grateful to sponsors for allowing me to be who I was and to encourage that spirit. So if you've got young people around you, my God, I hope you encourage them, because they could be sitting on the board and then you're going to be in real trouble. No. But thank you. I appreciate the time. Thank you. God bless.